Reading from the Jiva Dharma, Chapter 6. Nitya Dharma, Race and Caste. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. When these moods become established in the heart, a disposition arises that is called Radha. And the moods that are established in the heart is Sharanagati. I'll explain this in context, but it's Sharanagati. That I will only do that which is favorable for unalloyed bhakti. I will reject that which is unfavorable. Bhagavan is my only protector. I can derive absolutely no benefit from Gyan, Yoga, and other practices. I cannot obtain anything, even maintain myself. By my own endeavor, I will serve Bhagavan as far as I am able, and he will take care of me. Who am I? I am his. My duty is to fulfill his desire. I am wretched, insignificant, and materially destitute. So, this is what happens when you take shelter of Krishna. These moods arise in the heart, and this disposition is called shraddha, or faith. A jiva who has this shraddha is eligible for bhakti, and this is the first stage in the development of the swabhava like that of the pure jivas who are eternally. So this is the qualification for bhakti. Shraddha, only this, when these moods enter into the heart. And it's the first stage of the development of our swabhava, our eternal nature. Therefore, this is the nitya swabhava of the jivas, and all other swabhavas are naimittika. So this is the eternal nature of the jiva. I am a kshatriya, I am strong, I am courageous, I am clean, I am tolerant. That's naimittika, it's temporary. So, om jnana timarandasya, jnanam jana salakaya, aksu nutam yena, tasmai shri gurave namaha, shri chaitanya mano vishtam, Napitam yena bhutale, dayam rupa kadamayam, vidati sapadantitam, vanisha kalpa tarubhyascha, vipashindu bhayevacha, patitanam bhavanebhyo, vaishnavebhyo namo nama, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Siyadvaita Gadadha, Shivat Adi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this book is called Jiva Dharma. Jiva means the jiva. It's the dharma of the living entity. And there's you prove things by showing what happens when you don't do it. You know, it's good to be a devotee. But if you don't do it, then there's no love in your heart or whatever it is. So this book, Jiva Dharma, and putting it in context, it's the story of people coming to Krishna consciousness after the time of Lord Chaitanya. And as the various people come, according to their particular conditioning, they require a different subject of Krishna consciousness to clarify their doubts. And therefore, as these varieties of people are somehow meeting up with Premdas Babaji and Vaishnav Das in Gojrum Dweep, following how they become enlightened, we learn all the tattvas or subjects of Krishna consciousness. So what happens is we've been following for a few chapters the spiritual journey of Lahari Mahasai, who is a wealthy zamindar who becomes enlightened and joins the ashram, and he's an older man. Now we're at the part where his son comes to try to bring him back home to relieve them of the embarrassment that their father became a Vaishnava. They're from, and we know how it is, there's the extended self, so your ego can extend to your family. And the joys, and not just in love, but the joys and successes or failures of the family you feel. So they're feeling this is a disgrace that he's joined. So they send his son, who's Devi Das, who's a logician, a professional teacher of logic, and he's also what's called the smart Brahmin, that they feel that religion is following all the specific purificatory rules in the Shastra, at least the ones they understand, and that only one who is a Brahmin is really qualified to do them and be liberated. And if you're born in another condition, you do your duties, and then by your birth, you can get better bodies. So they're very, very caste conscious. And therefore, when the descendants of Chankazi come to visit Vaishnav Das and Lahari Mahasai, and they're shown this respect because they've actually become Vaishnavas, then the son, Chudamani, or Devi Das, no, his name is Devi Das, he becomes outraged, and he thinks this is against the Shastra for people who are Hindus to associate with Muslims. And we know in that time, one of the ways that the Muslims would convert people, they would just throw water on a Brahmin, and he was like ostracized or something. So they have that kind of conception. Like anything else, it's based in some truth that is extended, because there is a truth. There is a truth of birth. Because your caste is determined by your nature, and your birth, the association of your birth and who you're born with has a lot to do with it. But it's not the absolute correlation. That's a misconception. And therefore, Devi Das brings Chudamani, a famous pundit, and they come and they challenge the Vaishnavas on this point. You know, how can, and because the Vaishnavas are saying that it's not birth, in fact, even a Muslim and take the step of Vaishnava, which is a high purificatory position, even in one sense. I mean, and then an argument ensues. First of all, the Vaishnavas don't want to argue, because basically it's the basic inclination and mood of argument is your false ego. I am the center is connected with I am right. I am the center. I am, the, you know, it's all about control, and control means power. So materialists, they want power. And their enjoyment is, I am better. That's material enjoyment. I deserve, I am better, I am the enjoyer, I am the controller. So knowledge is probably the greatest power. So no one likes to be subordinate psychologically, or they're wrong. They'll fight to the death. The Vaishnavas don't care about that. That's not their objective. Their objective is not power. Their objective is service. So they never really want to argue on the basis of false ego. They rather just say, okay, you're better than me. Where a materialist person, that's a fate worse than death. So, but somehow or other, the Chudamani, and he's come with all these smart Brahmins, they actually insult the Vaishnavas. Now the Vaishnavas kind of meet, okay, we're going to have to defend. And they choose this Vaishnav Das, because this Vaishnav Das is, he was a Mayavadi sannyas before, he was learned, and now he's very fixed in devotional service. So it's disturbing for them. And the basic principle here is that the qualification for bhakti is not your nature. Now, two things. One, they believe the nature is determined at birth. But it's not even your nature in this life, regardless of what your birth. It is shraddha. It is this surrender to God, whatever your condition is. And it's very confusing because it's a very high thing, but it's not material. It's a core condition of the soul, so it's beyond material. So it doesn't matter what material situation you're in. If you somehow become inspired to surrender, it doesn't matter if you're still a slav. You're exalted. It doesn't really matter what your habits are, what caste you're from, gender, whatever. A society may use to put someone in one place or the other. Bhakti is beyond designation. Sarvapati, Vinir Muktam. Sarvapati, all the designations. Vinir Muktam, you're liberated from that. Sarvapati, Vinir Muktam. Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevana Bhakti, Uttama. Uttama Bhakti means you're free from designations. It's a spiritual qualification. It has nothing to do with material designations. And people who are smart to Brahmins, they can't understand this. Because their spiritual qualification is simply based on nature, which they believe is birth. A lot of times they do have purified natures in the mode of goodness, etc. So, but here the Vaishnavas are answering, how can a Muslim be a Vaishnav? How can and this degraded birth be removed? And it can be removed by the condition of surrender. Then you have the highest qualification, you have the qualification of the soul. And in fact, all other indirect processes of purification and high birth and everything, the only purpose of anything is to bring you closer to God. Which you don't deny that good qualities and all these things do it, but it's not enough. And therefore, in the Bhagavatam, it says, Dharma Svanushtita Pumsa Viviksena Kadatya Padiyadityarishava. It's only so much useless labor. It doesn't give you Yadi Ritim. And where does that taste come from? The taste comes from the surrender. Putting yourself in the proper position before God, which means taking shelter of Him, His superiority, His love, so that's where it comes from. So a person may have attained spiritual qualification, But that doesn't mean he's materially qualified. So, Vaishnav Das describes this from the Bhagavatam. And then, Sri said, I'll accept the Bhagavatam. So he says, okay, then here's some Gita verses. Shipram Bhavati Dharma Mother. One who becomes a devotee, very quickly he becomes purified. Very quickly, because the Shraddha develops. And the Shraddha is none other than the nature of the soul. So that's the most elevated position when you come in contact with the soul. So now he's describing this, what this Shraddha is, as the qualification for bhakti, qualification for this yoga, which he described before, is a topmost yoga. Yogi namapi sarvesham magyatena taratmanam shadhavam bhajate. Of all yogis, he worships me with faith and devotion is the highest of all. So now Chudamani continues, I understand, but you still have not explained what Shraddha is. If Shraddha develops from Satkarma, virtuous deeds, then my argument is stronger. This is the Smarta Brahman. Because Shraddha cannot arise without performing the Satkarma and Swadharma of Vanashra. Muslims do not perform this, so how can they be eligible for bhakti? So what's his answer going to be? What is Shraddha? If Shraddha is based on your virtuous deeds, and someone who's outside of Varnashram can't perform them, then how can they be purified and how can you associate it? So Vaishnav Das says, it is a fact that Shraddha arises from Supriti, pious deeds, but he's going to explain it. It's not the type of pious deeds that you think of. So first he agrees with him. It is stated in the Brihat Naradiya Purana 4:33, Bhaktistu Bhagavat Bhakta Shangena Parijayate Satsanga Prafjate Pubri Sukritir Pura Santri. The inclination of for bhakti is awakened by the association of Bhagavan's bhakti. The jiva attains the association of Shuddha bhaktis by accumulated effect of spiritually pious activities performed over many lifetimes. So when you come to Krishna consciousness and come to the conception that the highest sublimity is to surrender to God fully, then he's saying, yes, that's the accumulated effect of spiritually pious activities performed over many, many, many lifetimes. Now, here's the caveat. He said there are two types of sukriti, nitya and naimittika. Nitya sukriti bears eternal fruit, and it results in sadhu, sangha, and bhakti. The nitya sukriti, which he'll explain, is the sukriti that has to do with the soul. And what's the soul? It's the swabhava, the soul is service. So it has to do with sukriti that has to do some way or other with serving God or hearing from God's devotee or agyata sukriti or unknowingly doing so. Naimittika sukriti, otherwise known as anicca or impermanent, bears temporary results that depend on some cause, and it leads to material enjoyment and impersonal liberation. So you can have naimittika sukriti, and you can become a Brahmin, and you can go to higher planets, and you can enjoy, and you can become liberated, but it's temporary. Because its cause is, it's dependent on some cause. And when the cause is gone, then it's finished. Well, nitya sukriti has to do with love. Love is causeless. All types of material enjoyment are non-eternal because they depend on some cause. Many people think that mukti is eternal, but this is because they do not know the actual nature of mukti. The individual atma or soul is shuddha pure, nitya eternal, and sanatan primeval. The cause of the jivatma's bondage is association with maya, and mukti is the complete dissolution of this bondage. The act of deliverance or relief from bondage is accompanied in a single moment. So the act of release is not in itself an eternal action. Frankly, I got a little lost here myself. I'm wondering about the translation. Anyway, we'll go on. All considerations of mukti end as soon as emancipation is attained. So mukti is nothing more than the destruction of material cause. Therefore, since mukti is only the negation of a material cause, it is also naimittika, causal or temporary. I'm going to go back to that paragraph later on. I'm not really. It's rare that I haven't grasped it. On the other hand, attachment to the feet of Hulad Hari never ends once it's established in the heart. So this is the Sukriti of Bhakti. It has some permanent effect on the heart because it's connected with awakening aspects of the soul of love for Krishna. So it's never lost, actually, he's saying. Therefore, this Rati or Bhakti is Nitya Dharma, and we analyze its practices correctly, none of them can be said to be naimittika. None of the practices of bhakti are temporary because they're the things that you do in the spiritual world. This is just a realization that we have to actually understand. When we're acting on the platform of the soul by chanting Hare Krishna, it continues. It's something, it's the real you. Because it's the real you, it's an identity and it's an experience that goes beyond the body. The body can go, but that experience stays with you. And the concept of doing it, service, bhakti, it's the soul. So it gives you a conception of the soul. The type of bhakti that terminates at that point, type of bhakti that terminates at the point that it bestows mukti is only a type of nimittika karma. So when you do like worship the deities to get something else, that's not real bhakti. Well, bhakti that is present before, during, and after mukti is distinct and eternal truth, and it is the nitya dharma of the jivas. That bhakti, which is real bhakti, you're not doing it for a reason. It's just an expression, actually, of your soul. By the way, I'm just going to tell the audience, this section, for somehow or other, has been the most difficult for me, and I don't know why. It is said in the Mundaka Upanishads, Pariksha lokan karma chitan brahmano nirvedam ayam nasya kritta kritena. A Brahmin who has exhaustively studied the Shastras will become disinterested in the performance of karma by carefully examining the temporary, impure, and miserable nature of Swargaloka and the other celestial planets were attainable by performing pious deeds. This is so because the Nitya Vastu, Bhagavan, the eternal reality, this is because the Nitya Vastu is eternal reality and is beyond the reach of karma. To gain factual knowledge and realization of that eternal supreme person, one should find a qualified guru who is learned in the Vedas, who is firmly established in the service of Bhagavan, and who knows the absolute truth. One should then approach that guru carrying wood, kindling a sacrificial fire, and should surrender body, mind, and words to him with faith and humility. Karma Yoga and Gyan all produce Namitika Sukriti, because whatever you get was just temporary, because it's not connected with the soul. It's enjoyment or stopping enjoyment. Either way, it's external to the soul. The nature of the soul is service and consciousness. So I guess the point that's being made here is that he's answering his question. How do you get this shraddha, which is the cause of bhakti, the foundation of bhakti? So it's not one's nature. But then he said, but no, there must be some sadkarma. There must be some sukriti. He said, yes, it's sukriti, but it's a different type of sukriti. It's a sukriti of experiencing the soul by somehow coming in contact with the devotee or performing some devotional activities. So it's an experience of the soul. It's kind of like an awakening of the soul. So it's not temporary. While all other activities, they're not have to do with the soul, therefore they're not stable. Reality is stable because it's eternally existing. Illusion is not. Dreams are not. They're dependent on something else. But reality is eternal. Nasate vidyate bhavo nabhavo vidyate. That which is temporary is non-existent. It doesn't have a real basis. Its existence is imposed by the consciousness. That which is temporary has no existence. Like our body, it exists, but the reality of the body is the atoms, not the person that is there. That's an imposition on a combination of the consciousness of the soul, the sukriti, the karma that comes out, the particular body you get. It's not really existing. There's something that existing. What's existing is something that's unchanging. So unless you see the unchanging truth, you're not really seeing reality. Only one who has accumulated nitya sukriti over many lifetimes will develop shraddha. So many lifetimes, the service to the devotee, or meeting a guru, or meeting a teacher, or going to a temple, it brings out your nature. What is your nature? When you actually have vision, when you actually see, I'm part of God. And you see, he's infinitely greater than me. I'm completely dependent on him. And you just want to serve because that's who you are. I'll do everything for bhakti. I'll avoid what's unfavorable. He is protecting me. I maintain. I'm nothing. His desire is supreme. It's just a natural manifestation of what is consciousness. Because it's made of God. It's made for God. It's made to love. So So when you have that sukriti of awakening the soul enough, after many, many, many lifetimes, then it can arise to the consciousness that I should surrender to God. And therefore, one who is a Muslim, and he's come to that point, somehow chanted the holy name, came to Krishna consciousness, doesn't matter what birth he is in, aho bhata swapta chitogriyan yajivagre vartate namatuja. Even one name hanging on the lip, there's so much nitya sukriti. So respect that person, regardless of some kind of karmic situation where his bad karma is manifesting now in terms of his body, his social position, etc. There's something much higher than the naimittika sukriti, the temporary things of, you know, I did this deed, I get this, I get this, understand, I become detached, whatever you get. It's something so much higher. Naimittika sukriti produces many different results, but it will not lead to the development of faith and unalloyed bhakti. So your naimittika sukriti, your birth, your mantras, your started family, your caste, your peacefulness, your tolerance, all these things, whatever qualities you have, whatever nature you have, it can produce so many things, but it won't produce bhakti. Chudamani, please explain clearly what you mean by bhakta sangha and bhakti kriya, contact with acts of devotion. From what type of sukriti do these arise? So where do the acts of devotion come from? So again, the whole purpose here is to explain that the highest qualification is the qualification of heart. And that is transcendental to the material situation. One devotee may be more peaceful, more tolerant, may be more self-controlled, but he may not be more advanced. He just has better sat-karma. He has just a better nature. But that's karma sukriti. That is karma sukriti. Vaishnavdas, bhakta sangha means conversing with Shuddha bhaktas, serving them, and hearing their discourses. So what does contact with devotion means? It means to converse with pure devotees, to serve them and hear their discourses. Shuddha bhaktas perform the activities of bhakti, such as public congregational chanting of Srinam. Participation in these activities or performing them on one's own is called bhakti kriya, contact with acts of devotion. So you can become bhakti sangha, contact with people of devotion, or bhakti kriya, contacts with acts of devotion. The Shastras explain that bhakti kriya consists of activities as cleansing the temple of Srihari, offering a lamp to Tulsi, and observing Hari Vasara, Akadasi, Janmasthami, and others. Such activities create sukriti that nourishes devotion, even if one performs them accidentally or without pure Shraddha. When this sukriti acquires strength after many lifetimes, Shraddha for sadhu sangha, an exclusive devotion develops. So this is the sukriti. The association with devotees, acts of devotion, objects of devotion. And when that goes on enough, so you see, even in our preaching Krishna consciousness, whatever you call for it, it's not that everyone is at the level of coming to pure devotion, but it'll move them forward and so they see so much benefit. It may be acknowledged that every vastu, every substance, has some particular potency. And this is known as the inherent potency of that substance. The potency to nourish bhakti is found only within activities of bhakti. So he may, that Muslim, he may have bad karma sukriti, but if they've got the association of the devotee somehow in a past life or something, and it could be many different factors. The sukritis don't have to run powerful. You can have karma sukriti but not have any bhakti sukriti. And you can have bhakti sukriti but not have karma sukriti. These activities produce sukriti even if they are performed indifferently. What to speak when they are performed with faith. So it shows you how devotion comes into the heart. What to speak when we do it with faith. We're actually attentive to the holy name. We're attentive to our service. We're prayerful by the deities. We're prayerful in our reading. This is expressed in the Prabhash Kanda quoted in Hari Bhakti Vilas. Madhura Madhuram Metam Mangalam Mangalanam Sakala Nigma Vali Satpalam Chitrupam Sakritapi Parikitam Sadeya Heliava Vigavaranara Matram Tariye Krishna Nama. Sri Nam Krishna is the sweetest among all sweet things, and it stands supreme among all that is auspicious. It is the eternally ripened spiritual fruit of the wish-fulfilling tree of the Vedas. O best of the Bhrigus, Sri Krishna Nam awards immediate deliverance from the ocean of material existence to anyone who offenselessly chants even once, either with faith or without faith. Thus, all types of sukriti that nourish bhakti are nitya sukriti. When this sukriti becomes strong, one gradually develops shraddha in ananya bhakti, unalloyed bhakti, and one attains sadhu sangha. Birth in a Muslim family is the result of naimittika duskriti, temporary and pious, whereas faith in ananya bhakti is the result of nitya sukriti, eternal pious deeds. What is surprising about this? So you can have eternally pious deeds by serving a devotee, and then you can have anicca. What's it called here? Then you can have naimittika duskriti, impious deeds, which are temporary. Chudamani, this is what I meant by my previous question. If there is such a thing as bhakti, poshika sukriti, sukriti that nourishes bhakti, it must arise from some other type of sukriti. But Muslims do not have any other type of sukriti, so it is not possible for them to have bhakti, poshika, sukriti. Vaishnava, this is not a fact. Nitya sukriti and naimittika sukriti are classified separately, so they do not depend on one another. So you can have a very high karma and have no bhakti, or you can have a very low karma and have a lot of bhakti. He's not understanding. There's two types of sukriti. Yes, everything that we do is based on sukriti, but there's two types of sukriti. Sukriti that has to do with activities in relationship with the soul, and naimittika sukriti, temporary activities based on the body. Once there was a simple hunter who was full of impious deeds, but who chanced to stay up night and fast on Shivaratri. Because of this nitya sukriti, he accrued from this, he developed eligibility for bhakti. send the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vaishnavam Yata Shambhu. Among Vaishnavas, Shivaji is the best. From this statement is understood that Mahadev is most worshipable Vaishnav, and one attains Hare Bhakti by observing a vow to please him. That's Shiva. Chidamani, do you mean to say that Nitya Sukriti comes by chance? If it's not caused by pious deeds, then how does it come? Vaishnav, everything comes about by chance. This is also on the path of karma. What is the circumstance by which the jiva first enters the cycle of karma? Can it be anything other than a chance occurrence? The Mimamsa philosophers describe karma as a nadi, being without beginning, but karma actually does have a root. The chance occurrence that brings one's original karma into effect is indifference to Bhagavan, Bhagavad Vimukhita. Similarly, Nitya Sukriti also seems to be a chance occurrence. In the Swetashvatara Upanishads, it gives the verse, the jiva and the indwelling paramatma both reside in the same tree, namely the material body. The jiva is attached to material enjoyment and therefore sunk in the bodily concept of life. Bewildered by Maya, he cannot find any means of deliverance, and thus he laments. However, by the influence of Sukriti acquired over many lifetimes, he can attain the mercy of Ishvara Shuddha Bhakti. At that time, he will see in his heart that there is the second individual within the tree of the body. This is Ishvara, who is eternally served by his unalloyed bhaktas. When the jiva witnesses the uncommon glories of Sri Krishna, he becomes free from all lamentation. Okay, I'm going to end now because this section, it's a little difficult reading. Would anyone like to say hello?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Hey, hi, Bogyal.
No questions today, huh?
Yeah, give me a question.
Well, I had two, but what's an example of objects of devotion that when we come in contact with them, they are give us Sukriti?
Deities, holy name, devotees, the holy places, like that.
Uh-huh. Oh, see, now deities, I wouldn't have ordinarily thought of as like objects.
Okay. Oh no, they're things. They're vastu. So an English word for vastu can also be object. It's an object. Go ahead. Okay, what's your next question?
I don't know if I heard properly. When did you say something when you were reading? Did you say something like to be born into a Muslim family is like due to impiety, or you know something
yeah,
to that
I
effect?
Mean, in that type of culture, now everyone's impious, but in that type of culture, they were yavanas. They were meat eaters, you know, and, you know, they didn't have the Vedic culture. They rejected the Veda. They're not following the Vedic culture. So they were, it definitely was a lower birth at that time. Yeah.
Yeah, well, the reason why I was asking was because, you know, we're supposed to be able to recognize that Vaishnavas can be found in any religion, you know.
Yeah, but that's what Vaishnav Das is saying.
Yeah, yeah.
The Vaishnavas can be found any place. That's his argument.
Yeah. I'm just trying to get past the, what is apparently such an such a politically incorrect, you know, apparently politically incorrect.
Yeah, well, let's just look, whatever it is, you can't say, but in that particular culture,
yeah,
it wasn't such good karma in one sense.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. It's just karma.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wouldn't be good karma to be born a Jew in Germany in 1942.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another thing. But it was just a, you know, they don't perform the rituals. They don't have the same level of rule of guidance by the Vedic scriptures. So from a person who understands the value of that Shastra, then it's a great disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, any other questions?
Thank you. Thank you.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, Gautam Bhakta Das.
Thank you, Govardhan. I think these classes, been doing it a while. I don't think there's many people attending these ones, but they listen online. Good. Anyone else like to say hello? Yeah, I'm so exhausted. I'm going to end now anyway. Why don't you go for 30 seconds?